Welcome, everyone. My name is Scott Shepard, founder and CEO of the City's First podcast. Super excited to come basically try and scan the landscape, everything related to complete streets. And we have one of the foremost experts in the US on that topic, which is David Smith, Complete Streets Manager with the director with the Chicago City of Chicago Department of Transportation. So welcome, David. Really excited to have you here today.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here.
Yeah, so and this kind of complements our Complete Streets theme for this partnership that we have with EIT Urban Mobility and UMX. So leading into this, today's episode is brought to you by UMX, powered by EIT Urban Mobility. So whether you're a professional or a student, UMX makes it easy to upskill or reskill in urban mobility. You can dive into their free self-paced courses, explore expert level videos and webinars, or just go deeper into in-person training programs across Europe. And you can check them out at urbanmobilitycourses.eu and follow them on LinkedIn. So without further ado, David, we'll just kind of kick it off and get started. We have about three or four questions that we'll just kind of have a good back and forth exchange and really dive deep into Complete Streets and what you're doing in Chicago. So with that, I'd like to just kind of pose the first question for you, which is, how has Chicago successfully expanded its bike lane network since the pandemic?
Sure. In Chicago, it's an incredibly exciting time for cycling and complete streets in general. Since the pandemic, if you look back to 2019, we've seen an increase of bicycling of 120% over the last 5 years, which is the highest of any large city in the United States. So it really has been a transformational couple of years. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but a big part of it is based upon the infrastructure, and it's a result of the infrastructure that we're implementing. We're installing more protected bike lanes, more neighborhood greenways, more low-stress cycling infrastructure than we've ever done in the history of the city. For example, in the last couple of years, we've been averaging about 50 miles of new bike infrastructure every year, with about 75 to 80% of those being either protected bike lanes or neighborhood greenways. We had an effort over the last couple of years where, within a period of about 18 to 24 months, we upgraded every single protected bike lane in the city with concrete curbs to provide maximum protection and comfort for everybody. And in addition to the rapid expansion in terms of mileage and a focus on low stress, I think the way in which we're approaching the expansion of the network, how we're building partnerships across communities within the city of Chicago, and how we are really telling a story with the infrastructure that we're creating has been a huge part of why we've been so successful.
Indeed, the pandemic was kind of this, let's say, tipping point or this catalyst for change. Obviously, it probably would have happened sooner than later, but if you look at just the kind of the street grid and the network of Chicago, it really lends itself well to a very connected and thoughtful, let's say, cycling overlay into the existing infrastructure. But not only that, it provides opportunities to really kind of, let's say, increase accessibility, equity, and disadvantaged communities, et cetera, and with linkages to public transit, which are some of the other topics I like to talk about. But that's astounding success. One of the reasons why I personally reached out to you, because I knew about the success story in Chicago, even pound for pound compared to other American cities. So it's really amazing in such a short period of time. So kudos to
No,
you and your team.
oh, thank you. We do have an amazing team at CDOT. It's all hands on deck on this. And I think, you look at how we're implementing this infrastructure, and it's across every single program, whether it's the streets program or our streetscapes program or our arterial resurfacing program, street reconstructions, traffic signal modernizations. We've really standardized the implementation of protected bike lanes, safer intersections, pedestrian improvements, transit improvements. We really are implementing these types of things throughout every single project. And, in addition to, you mentioned, the importance of connecting to other modes of transportation like public transit, we're also really intensely focused on connecting people to the most meaningful destinations within their everyday life. So parks, schools, neighborhood commercial corridors. In 2023, we released the Chicago Cycling Strategy, which is essentially our current bike plan, but it's really, we intentionally called it a strategy. It's not your traditional long range, network bike plan, but it's really focused on where we're at right now. So much is changing within the landscape of transportation. For example, e-bikes are growing in Chicago so fast over the last several years. It's been a very exciting and a huge part of, why more people are biking. Scooters, cargo bikes, like we're seeing really a proliferation of, new ways to get around our streets. And so it's important that we are reacting to that in real time and taking advantage of momentum and partnerships that we have right now. It's very hard to predict what the scene of transportation will look like in 10 years from now or 15 years from now. So from our perspective, we had a bike plan that we created in 2012, which was very successful and outlined a network across the whole city. And it was very helpful for us and it got us where we needed to be. But where we're at right now is really focused in on how we're delivering these projects, how we're working across communities, recognizing that Chicago is a very diverse city, 77, official community areas, over 100 neighborhoods, 2.7 million people. We have, it's a very diverse city. And so the way that we approach cycling and the expansion of our network in one neighborhood is not necessarily the right way to approach it in a different neighborhood. And so
Absolutely.
we developed a strategy where we are upfront about that, we acknowledge it, and we lean into it. And by doing that, I think it's really allowed us to be successful in neighborhoods that are historically have been auto dependent, don't ha have not had the investments within cycling infrastructure, and haven't had the visibility in the neighborhood around bicycling. We've got a process by which we have come in and we really approach it from a community perspective and a network perspective versus one street at a time. At the same time, we have neighborhoods where you have some of the highest rates of cycling of anywhere in the country, and we have a very well-developed network. And so that process of engaging with the community and how we expand the network and the projects that we're doing and the scope of work and all of that is completely different. It doesn't make sense to have, a one-size-fits-all approach. And we outline that in our, that's a big part of our strategy. And I think it's been really, really transformative over the last couple of years.
Yeah, one size fits all. I think that's the key takeaway. And leveling up certain districts and communities that perhaps have an opportunity to expand their access and opportunities to really kind of embrace this kind of citywide approach is really definitely the path forward. Pardon the pun there, or pun intended, actually. So let's maybe dig a little deeper here. So maybe if you want to talk about how specifically, not just cycling, but concepts around complete streets and tactical urbanism and how tactical urbanist programs are helping strengthen Chicago's communities.
Sure. There's a variety of programs happening in Chicago, which I think would fall under tactical urbanism. We have a whole program that facilitates third parties or community organizations or chambers of commerce to work with the city to take the lead on implementing various tactical urbanism installations. And we also have programs where, as the Department of Transportation, we're implementing infrastructure that is really more focused on a rapid delivery implementation, a little bit of piloting or experimentation, evaluation, and then eventually formalizing that into a standardized program. And so I think one great example that we've been doing is what we're calling left turn traffic calming. This is something that a couple of years ago, we were paying close attention to in Portland, Washington, D.C., started doing this. New York City's doing a great job at it. But really, it's really a quick hit rapid implementation of simple infrastructure that slows down left-turning motorists, keeps pedestrians safer, and it's been incredibly successful. When we were developing this program, we were looking very closely at traffic crash data, pedestrian crashes, and some of the circumstances behind what is happening when a pedestrian is seriously injured. And what we found is that a huge percentage of people are crossing the street within a crosswalk with the walk signal, doing everything that they should be doing, but they're getting hit by a driver who's turning left. And so we really honed in on that. Why is that happening? What are some of the challenges with that operation of making a left-hand turn at a busy signalized intersection? Where are they happening? What is the context of the intersection? Is it multi-lane road meets multi-lane road, or single lane meets, a truck route? And so we developed the program, experimented a bit with it, and did a series of evaluation at these intersections. And what we found is that, almost instantly, all traffic crashes, reduced by 25 or 30% for all modes of transportation. We saw a huge increase in the percentage of drivers yielding for pedestrians in the crosswalk. So it was really, really successful. And we then took that, really, I would call that a tactical, quick hit program, expanded it. Now we've got, over 100 intersections, and it's just continuing and continuing to grow very quickly. And then by understanding how it works and what works well, we've now turned that into a formal permanent program where we're actually recreating this left turn traffic calming with, instead of using bollards or rubber speed bumps, now we're using concrete curbs and actually pouring in medians to have that same effect, but to really make it, part of the permanent landscape.
Okay. And just by analyzing traffic data and seeing these patterns, that was a let's say a quick win for the city to introduce traffic calming and let's say soften the streetscape so that it became more inclusive for a range of users and kind of moving away from this autocentric paradigm, shall we say. Would that be the kind of a correct way to state that? So, because, I mean, you have such large, heavily traveled arterials throughout Chicago, north, south, east, west, a couple diagonal streets, but mainly north, south, east, west, a total rectilinear grid, and many are heavily traveled. And to be able to kind of calm and soften those, let's say, touch points, those pain points, is a real win demonstrated by the city and your department to show that these types of interventions just in a short period of time can have a maximum impact with from what I gather from what you're sharing, a very modest investment.
Very modest investment. And it's something that people inherently recognize too. And we hear about that. They might not know that it's called left turn traffic calming, or they might not know that, some of the terminology. But what we're hearing from people all over the city is, we want more of this. We see the benefit.
It's slowing
We don't,
things down. It's
right.
making
Slowing things
things
down.
safe.
It's working. We don't need everybody to understand every single detail of it.
Or the nomenclature or the terminology or anything. No one cares.
But the more through this process of tactical to evaluation to permanent, and then inserting that across a variety of delivery programs, fleet streets, resurfacing, traffic studies, plan developments, et cetera, it's now just become part of the common language of what our streets in Chicago look like.
That is amazing. And it's really heartening because I don't want to name cities or locations, but certain places have kind of, again, pardon the pun, backpedaled or gone backwards away from their open streets. And a lot of these quick build emergency design interventions circa, early mid 2020, and they went back to the status quo. But it seems to me, and I think the proof is from what you're already sharing with us in the audience here, is that, this has been expanded writ large and, let's say, formalized across a range of different programs and departments. So I think that that is a great model for other American and global cities to take inspiration from, so that we don't kind of vacillate or kind of go back and forth and overthink these things. A lot of these things are really just simple common sense.
Yeah, I mean, we don't, we've got complicated problems, but sometimes the solution is kind of right there in front of us.
Exactly.
You don't need to overcomplicate things. When we find something that works, it's just a matter of how do we fine-tune it and how do we deliver it in a way that it's efficient, cost-effective for everybody. And that's really the key is, taking advantage of opportunities that present themselves, but also creating opportunities that don't exist. And I think that, we've through CDOT, Department of Transportation, we really are aligned on our complete streets approach being at really the heart and soul of what we do as a department. And you're seeing the results in the last as an example, just one example, there's a lot of signs that what we're doing is beneficial to the city for a whole host of quality of life issues. But when we look specifically at the issue of traffic safety, what we've seen over the last couple of years since the height of the pandemic, which was a transformative time, and I think as we look back, it was a period where there were a lot of people, open minds to some of these new approaches to our streets, and people seeing that our streets and our public spaces can function in a different way. We also, across the country and across the world, saw the height of traffic fatalities. And so, no different in Chicago, 2021 or so, we had a real spike in the number of traffic fatalities. The last 3 or 4 years, we've seen a 30% decrease in the number of traffic fatalities on an annual basis. That's, at the same time, nationally, it's gone down 5%. So we're outperforming the country as a whole. And I think it really speaks to how we're delivering these projects and the culture change that's happening, within the city. The traffic safety piece of it, I mean, that's a huge part of it. That's a lot of lives saved, and it's incredibly meaningful and impactful. But it's also only one metric to point at why these types of improvements are critical for, becoming the city that, we want to be.
And then again, traffic safety does not just improve in a vacuum or just by itself. There is a physical externality or input that would, let's say, trend towards an improvement just in that metric, in addition to a range of metrics, which is the improvement and refinement in shared mobility infrastructure. So it gets back to infrastructure and place matter. So that's. I think it speaks volumes in terms of being one of many factors for Chicago's kind of leadership in outperforming many other locations with this improvement in traffic safety and kind of other post-pandemic let's say trends. So that's great to hear.
Yeah. And one thing I want to highlight too is that just about our approach, we've really been focused in on connecting the dots between complete streets and all of the quality of life issues, the kitchen table issues. For most people, most families across the city, the bike network, left turn traffic calming, like that is not the issue that's being discussed around the dinner table. The issues that are front and center of most people's minds are, it makes sense. Public safety, access to employment, affordability, access to education. These are issues, public health. All of these issues that are critical to communities across the city to achieve and have a high quality of life. All of these issues have an inherent aspect of mobility and transportation and the ability to move around our city in a way that is safe and efficient and comfortable. Economic development, affordability, youth engagement, all of these critical quality of life issues. You have to have a transportation system that supports people getting around safely and efficiently and to have options. And I think that we've been really intentional over the last several years about framing these projects in that way, that it's not just about creating 6 or 7 feet of space for someone to ride a bike or to create a little bit of extra sidewalk space for someone to cross the street. We're doing those things, and that, that's good. But the bigger picture is that is connecting the dots to how critical those that improvement is to achieving a whole set of, broader citywide goals.
Yeah, it's outcomes driven. It's not just project driven. It's not siloed, and it's a pivot away from traditional standard long range land use and urban transportation planning, which we've all trained your AICP. So am I. So we know all the different sections and chapters. You have your housing element. You have your economic development element. This is really a sea change, and mobility is that common thread, that glue. So me myself having worked in practice here in Europe for the last 8 years. That common glue, that common thread, the blueprint is my previous episode last month in the City's First podcast was around the SUMP, SUMP, the Sustainable Urban Mobility Plan, using mobility and transportation as that common thread for all these different quality of life indicators. Exactly what you're saying, connecting the dots in Chicago, which again is a bit unique or different in United States and Canadian traditional transportation land use planning, but it's quite commonplace here in Europe. And I believe this is the trend that we're going to see many cities and municipalities moving forward. It just makes sense, it's logical, and it stitches everything together. So it's music to my ears that you're doing that in Chicago. And yeah, it was kind of eye-opening for me, kind of retraining my brain from my practice in California in the US to here. And it seems like many different departments and agencies are heading that direction.
Yeah, I mean, it helps, it helps in terms of delivering projects and recentering people, residents, stakeholders around the goals of these programs and where we're going. And so, you're never going to get everybody to agree on the specific approach to a problem. To solve a problem, but you can get almost everybody to agree on, the bigger vision. And if as
Yes.
long as we're really tying it back to the quality of life issues and those issues that are most important to people, sort of the details of the project are not as critical to have 100% alignment on, let's say, because
Totally,
it doesn't
totally.
exist. You won't ever get that.
Yep.
But if we can sort of get enough support and an understanding at least of how a particular project fits into achieving larger goals, how a project fits into a larger network or a larger initiatives, then the details of what a particular block looks like, or if you're losing 8 parking spaces versus 4 parking spaces, seems very small in the context of what we're trying to do together between city agencies, elected officials, and community stakeholders.
Yeah, in the grand scheme of things. And a way I like to put it is you're working backwards. You already have your end goal, you have your outcome in terms of quality of life indicators and what your desired end state is. And then you're, I don't want to say backfilling, but you're identifying projects, programs, and initiatives that fit into that path forward, really,
Yeah,
versus
exactly.
being
Yeah.
project or data driven. And what, how should we say, build it and they will come? Well, they
Right.
don't. You don't build it and they
Right.
come.
Right.
You better identify where you want to
Definitely.
be, and then you figure out the projects that will fit into that vision. I mean, that so it should be the
Right.
other way around.
Right. Build it. If you build it, they will come. That was a common
Oh,
thing,
oh gosh,
and
buddy.
I always had a problem with
That's
it.
cringe, as my daughters would say.
Right. That's just not how it works.
It's
And it's
20th
not fair.
century urban planning. It's really what it is. It's mid 20th century autocentric urban planning, writ
Right,
large. That's
right.
what it
It
is.
doesn't work. It's not fair to residents and to
No,
community.
no.
But this idea of working backwards, I think, is a good one. And
Well, it's just my own personal take, but it's something to kind of reframe.
well, we've actually like very intentionally took this kind of working backwards approach in one of our programs that we call Neighborhood Bike Networks. And so this is an effort that is focused in communities that where cycling is not highly visible, where you don't have a lot of infrastructure. And what we did was identify these communities, but there is a str there are people biking. There's a strong demand and an interest for people to be able to ride their bike to the park or to the school or to the local business or to connect to public transit. But they just don't, people just don't feel comfortable doing so. It's not part of the, it hasn't been part of the neighborhood culture.
Yeah,
And so
culture,
we
right?
identify these neighborhoods, and we what we've done is we've taken this approach of forming essentially like a task force of like 20 to 25 people. And intentionally, we're not targeting like transportation advocates to be a part of this. We're seeking out people who are involved in public health or the healthcare system, people who are working on with chambers of commerce, or people who are working in schools. We try to involve high school students and young people. So we want to get like a wide cross section of perspectives. And we have created really a process by which we start out. First, we talk about just what are the perceptions of bicycling within the community. Why don't you ride a bike? Why do you ride a bike? What would help you bike more? And then we get into really a process where we're mapping out destinations that are most important to people within the neighborhood. And some of them are obvious, a large park or a school, but there's a whole lot of important destinations that we don't know about and you wouldn't know about unless you actually live in the community. And that could be, for example, like a small community health center within the neighborhood that provides a whole variety of services that's really critical for people to be connected to. So we start mapping this stuff out, and we're not even we spend, you know, the first part of the this process, we're not even talking about streets. We're not worried about which street we're going to use or what's possible. It's really working backwards and figuring out where do people need to get to. And then from there, once we have alignment and an understanding of that, then we start getting into, okay, well, this street might make the most sense to connect here, and this street connects to there, and this is what's possible on the street. That way, really, the street is the last thing that we're talking about, because now we've assigned and established a meaning to why this street or why not that street. And that has been something that's been really successful. And we're not talking about one street at a time. We're talking about 10 to 15 miles of streets at a time within a community. When we say a community in Chicago, you're talking about, you know, 100,000 people or so. And we've done that in neighborhoods on the west side of the city, on the southwest side of the city. We've been doing this every year for the last several years. And, you know, this whole process, I mean, we've got stories in communities where we start this process, 18 months later, we're implementing 15 miles of new bike infrastructure all at the same time that didn't exist. So we spend one summer going through the process, going to community events. We don't create new meetings for people to go to. We go to where people already are. We've been doing this in communities, in some cases, without even having a single like traditional town hall or community meeting. We're doing it through bike rides. We're doing it
Ad hoc,
through,
right.
yeah, going to places where people already are and engaging with them out on the street. And,
More
you know,
interactive, right.
more interactive, and it's not talking about one street at a time. For especially in communities where you don't have a lot of cycling infrastructure, or it's not, as I said, it's not as highly visible. Talking about one street at a time, you can't connect the dots between this project and public health or sustainability or affordability, because it doesn't make sense. It's just one street. You have to talk about these things as a complete network. And we've been doing that, and we've been doing it in a way that I think fits in with, as you said, you know, working backwards.
Well, and I love the mapping approach. For me, being a former map maker and cartographer, then urban planner, that's is near and dear to my heart. But also, kind of mapping out the different points of interest and coming up with the to use the for better or worse term, the desire paths, and overlaying that onto the streets that are the most impactful, and then improving those interconnected streets to improve the quality of life at a community level, to give meaning and purpose, and basically leveling up this experience to make it let's say a sea change, a culture change. So it's frictionless and seamless, and people have the opportunity to mix and match and switch modalities based upon their own kind of daily or hourly preference and their own kind of let's say roles and skills in life. So it's really just opening up a whole new world. I forget who was, I think it was Jarrett Walker in Portland, or someone else was mentioning about mobility is freedom. Actually, it was Jarrett Walker, the author of Human Transit, and with his practice, mapping out bus lane networks. And mobility is freedom, and it's opportunity. And this is just one element of a much bigger puzzle. But let's say zeroing in on the community level and doing it in a more impactful, we mentioned ad hoc way, hands-on way, that is not necessarily, it's not structured, but it's delivering results in a way that would be a bit of unorthodox from how we were traditionally trained and indoctrinated in urban planning. So it's great to hear, and I really appreciate you sharing that that story. We only have about another minute or two, but I just wanted to get your take on if you could just give us a really quick snapshot of one project, one neighborhood, maybe in the last 12 to 24 months that is near and dear to your heart that you would love to share with the audience.
There's so many,
I know, tough question. Sorry.
but I would say, one that is really has been really important is a street, Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago. It's one of
Oh,
those angled
okay.
streets that you mentioned.
Yep.
It's one of the busiest streets for biking in the country.
Uh-huh.
It connects from our downtown all the way to the edge of our city on the northwest side.
Yes.
And over the last several years, we've really every year we've had projects happening on various segments where we're incorporating protected bike lanes, pedestrian refuge space, bus boarding islands, and in-lane bus stops where the bike lane goes behind the bus stop and you have a raised platform. We've been doing that, I think, faster than any city in the country. Last year, we implemented about 70 bus boarding islands, with most of them with the bike lane going behind the bus stop. That's, again, just a standard item at this point. The Milwaukee Avenue corridor, it's been a huge transformation. It's a very dense commercial corridor, very dense in terms of pedestrian activity, and we're doing a lot of this work. It also includes the consolidation of parking, on-street parking, to one side of the street. And so that's been a dynamic that has been very successful. And I think really important, because as we look at how our commercial corridors look like across Chicago, across the country, to implement many of these goals and these projects, it requires change. And there's nothing more complicated and sensitive at the moment than on-street parking. We've done a really good job of it. We've been successful. We've got a long way to go, but we're going to keep going at it. And that's definitely a corridor where we're really proud of, and we'll continue to have projects on every year for the foreseeable future.
So key takeaway, folks, Milwaukee Avenue. Follow that corridor, follow that project. That's the one to keep an eye on. But with that, David, we really thank you. I just want to kind of thank our sponsor, which is UMX, for sponsoring this episode. If you want to learn more about UMX, check out their catalog of 40 plus courses, expert videos, in-person trainings at urbanmobilitycourses.eu. They even have short courses on today's topic on complete and active streets. And you can find the link on all episode details on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple, and Amazon. And stay tuned, as I will be back next month to discuss micro logistics and delivery hubs with another expert. But to kind of round it off, and everyone can find David on social media. You're on LinkedIn, and I believe other channels as well too, with the Chicago DOT. But really excited to have you here today to give you give us your insights and expertise. Chicago is a role model for the US, if not the globe, in terms of what you've done in such a short period of time. And you're definitely moving the needle and breaking away from that traditionalist urban planning kind of paradigm and experimenting and operationalizing best practices that can be used for a range of communities and settings. So thank you, David. It's music to my ears. I'm sure the audience will definitely be contacting you with more questions, but just want to say thank you for your time, and it's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for highlighting Chicago, and really appreciate all of your work too. Thanks.
Thank you.